Welcome back up. If everybody's getting close to being up here, we're going to grab our seats. We do have a special treat, as Woody said. I get the pleasure of introducing one of my best friends up here. He's started this journey many, many years ago as a kid, and I know he went through a lot of trials and tribulations with it. But I have my friend Tyler from TS Magic. He's a magician getting ready to go to America's Got Talent. Starting next month is your audition, right? Yep. So we're going to have him come up here, give us some tricks, tell his testimony, and just share a little bit with us. So here's Tyler.
Thank you, Jordan. Good morning. How's everybody doing today? Perfect. My name is Tyler Sherwin. I've done magic now for 18 years, since I was 4 years old. My old babysitter's husband taught me my very first trick. At 4 years old, at my fourth birthday party, because he was a professional magician. He moved away when I was 9 to Knoxville, Tennessee, and then from 9 to 22, which I'm 22 currently, I've been doing magic, and I've been self-taught from since then. November the 14th, I will be auditioning in Cincinnati for America's Got Talent, and I'm very, very excited for that opportunity. In December, I'm also graduating from IPFW here in town as well. But a little bit about me. What we're going to do is a magic trick. This was one of the very first tricks I ever did when I was 6 years old. I was at my first talent show ever, and this trick I brought with me. I have an ace of spades, an ace of hearts, and then an ace of diamonds. So you need to remember it in that order. The spade is first, then the heart, and lastly, the diamond. This is just a card sleeve. Basically, it just covers up the cards. So what was the first card? Spades, close. I heard a lot of people say heart. Ace of spades was first, correct. And what was the second card? Are you sure? Okay, you're correct this time. Yes. And lastly, what is the last one? I'm sorry, but you're wrong. Do you think it's on the other side? Because if you did, you would be wrong again. I ended up traveling right behind my back. And so it's a very easy but fun magic trick. Thank you very much. Now, I will need a volunteer for this next one. Not everybody at once, because everybody raised their hands. Avery, will you come up here for me? Thank you for volunteering. How are you doing, Avery? Good. Are you? I'm sorry to embarrass you if I brought you up and embarrassed you. Here we have two sponge balls. Now, not a SpongeBob. Everybody always says, oh, you got SpongeBobs. No, they're sponge balls, kind of like SpongeBob. Now, just showing you how fast the hand is quicker than the eye. Now, everybody is afraid of the word magic, especially in churches. You have to be very careful with using the term magic. Everything I do is sleight of hand, where I take one sponge ball here into this hand, take this one right here. Watch this one vanish right before your eyes back into this hand. Obviously, one of my sleeves, but Avery, would you hold on to them for me? Thank you. They're back over here. Now, if I take this sponge ball here directly into this hand, Avery, hold your hand open for me, because I'm going to have you squeeze this one as tight as you can. And I have one and you have one, correct? By snapping, I can make mine vanish and travel into the most impossible place ever, your hand. Would you open it up and show everybody, in fact, it has traveled. So now we have two. I'm going to set this one right here in front of all of you. Would you hold your hand open just like this? I'm going to have you squeeze it again for me. So I have this one here. If I take this sponge ball here into this hand, I can literally throw it into your hand. Would you open it up for me? And see, that's exactly where they go. Now, having two sponge balls, would you hold on to them again? Make them completely vanish back into this hand. Now, this is sponge ball magic. But what I love to show everybody is how powerful the hands are. So everybody can do this trick, and we're going to have you face everybody, Avery. Now, if you would put your hands up like this, your thumbs up, just like I am, turn them down, and bring it up and over. Now, in order for this to work, you have to move your pinkies. So everybody move your pinkies. Perfect. You're right here moving your pinkies. Go one, two, three. Okay, we're going to do it again. So this is another technique magicians use called misdirection. Very easy to do. Would you put your hands up like this again? Thumbs up. Turn them down. Bring it up and over. Now move your pinkies. Some of you are moving your other fingers. You only can move your pinkies. So from right here, you just turn them over. So now I'm going to teach you this. Okay. Very easy to do. When I have you go here, here, and then here, this is the distraction point. When I tell you to look at your pinkies and move them, the first thing you do is move your pinkies. I can't do this either. But if you take that top hand up You place it underneath, you turn it over. And I'm still struggling with some of you people out in the crowd. So thank you very much, Avery. Thank you. We're going to do another magic trick, but it's not really a magic trick. This is more of just like a fun comedy trick. So I'm going to need a volunteer that knows everything. Dan? Dan, would you come up here for me? And have a seat right here. How are you doing, Dan? Thank you so much for coming up. If you would have a seat for me, please. Now, this is toilet paper. What do you do with toilet paper? Just kidding, don't tell me. That's your personal business. If you would hold it just like this for me. Now, you're going to be my toilet paper dispenser. Now, in order for this trick to work, it's going to be a lot of fun. But if you see how the trick is being done, which you will, please do not tell Dan. Dan, if you get a 3 out of 3, which hand it's in, whether it's my left or my right hand, I will give you a $100 bill right now.
All right.
So we'll take some toilet paper out just like this, and we're going to roll it up into a very tight ball. Pretty good toilet paper, as you can see, all the dust. Now, see, I'm going to show you a couple techniques magicians can do. We can take it into this hand, which is over here. We can also switch it into this hand, which is over here. Now, all you have to do is give me a 3 out of 3. 1, 2, which hand is it in?
Right.
My right?
Yes.
Correct. 1 for 1. Let's go. Ready? 1, 2, which hand is it in?
Right.
No, it's actually my left this time. So we'll count it 2 for 2. We'll just say you're close enough. Get ready. 1, 2, which hand is it in?
Right.
No, it's vanished. Okay, so we're going to do this again. Pay very close attention as we take some more here and roll it into a nice ball. So, here we are again with some more toilet paper. Okay, ready? 1, 2. If you had to guess, which hand is it in?
Right.
It's vanished again. Okay, so we're going to do it again. You just have to keep your eye on it. That's the only thing. Take it up into our hand like this. Is it top or bottom?
Bottom.
Bottom, correct. And now is it top or bottom?
Top.
Correct. Now is it top or bottom?
Well, I'd say bottom, but it's probably gone.
But where'd it go? Very, very true. Now, we're going to go big or go home.
Right.
So this is my favorite part of the trick. This is called clogging the toilet paper. So we're actually going to take the rest of it. You can throw that. Here, just keep your eye on it. All actually, right. Here, we'll set that right here for a second. And we're going to try it with that, too. We'll see if we can make that vanish as well. So we've got a big wad of toilet paper. 1, 2, which hand?
Top.
It's vanished. Okay, so now just keep your eye on this. We're going to fold it up into a little piece of paper. Okay, ready? 1, 2, which hand is it in?
Right.
It's vanished. Okay. Now, Dan, just to tell you where all of them went, they're all right behind you. All behind you. So thank you very much, Dan. Thank you. Oh, that trick is fun. Okay, so imagine this. I was doing a magic show at a church a couple years ago, and you have some of those teenage boys that think they know everything and how every single trick is done. Well, I had he was pointing out how I'm doing all these tricks, and he wasn't right on any of them, but he just wanted to say, oh, I know how all of it's done. Well, I was in front of about 300 people, and so I brought him up on stage, and I just bought a giant roll, like a ton of different rolls, I think a 12-pack of toilet paper, and I used 6 rolls of toilet paper on him alone because he had no idea where they were going. But his dad was hiding behind the stage, behind the curtains, and would walk out and grab it and then walk back. So he would look around him, and they weren't anywhere. So that is just also another way of misdirection. Now this next trick we're going to perform is going to be one of the tricks that I'm going to be taking with me on America's Got Talent. So it's coming up very, very soon, and I will need a volunteer for a card trick. Still not everybody at once. Trust me, I don't bite. Yes, perfect. Thank you very much. What is your name?
Lauren.
Lauren, nice to meet you, Lauren. I am Tyler. If you would, oh, I'm sorry. You can, yeah, put her there. If you would, stand up for me, please. Thank you very much. This is a red deck of cards. Okay. Every single card in this deck is different. I promise you. They're $2.97 at Walmart, $3.18 after tax.
Okay.
They are a normal deck. Choose any card you would like. Perfect. Now, if you would, go ahead and look at your card. Show everybody else your card, which is going to be obviously hard for everybody to see. And here I have a Sharpie.
Okay.
So what I would like for you to do is sign your name, your initials on that card. Okay. Now with this trick, what we're going to do is something amazing. This next to me is called my emergency box. It's called a clarity box, actually. Basically, it's only used for emergencies if I mess up the trick. So I'll take your card here. Mm-hmm. Remember this card, and we're going to, you have your signature on it. If I take it and give it one shuffle, I can go behind my back and feel the ink from your card because it's a fine point Sharpie. And I have found your card, the Four of Spades. Obviously, that's not it. There's been a card in here, and it says emergency use only, and it's been in here since the beginning of the trick. Now, if you watch on the inside, it's one card. Would you open that and make sure that is your card signed? So, thank you very much, and you get to keep that as a souvenir.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I have two more tricks with me. This next one, Jordan volunteered earlier, but he doesn't have to do it if he doesn't want to. But I will need, oh, he will volunteer. Perfect. Everybody give Jordan a round of applause. Okay, so we're going to do more toilet paper magic, but card magic as well. So this is a blue deck of cards, Jordan. Every card in this deck is different. Just tell me any time to stop.
Stop.
Right here, take that card right there, look at it, and show everybody your card. Now, I don't know if you can actually see his card or not, but what we're going to do is I need you to remember that card. Place it anywhere you would like in the deck of cards, and you can shuffle it up if you would like as well. You don't have to. Perfect. What we're going to do is take them, place them inside the card box just like this, and leave them there. Now comes the toilet paper magic part. So have any of you heard of the tear and restore newspaper magic trick, where you tear a newspaper four or five different ways, and it fully restores itself in a blink of an eye? It came around in the 1920s. So I wanted to do something with toilet paper because I use toilet paper a lot. Not for health reasons, but I just use it for magic shows. And what we're going to do is take five sheets of paper. Jordan, would you hold on to that? And I'm going to take five as well. Come on over here for me, Jordan, if you would. And you're going to do exactly as I do. Take them, rip them right down the middle. Obviously, I've done this a couple times.
Right down the middle.
Right down the middle. Perfect. Now, put them together again to show how equal they are. Show them both sides. Now what you're going to do is pull it right in half. There's a seam, and it should be. Pull it right in half, right on the seam. Perfect. Place them together again. Rip them one more time. And put them together one more time, and rip them for the last time. Now, in order for this to work, we have to take them and move them into a tight ball. So put them in a tight ball, just like this. The next thing we need is water, but we don't have water, so the next best thing is saliva. So, as you can guess, we are going to stick them in our mouth, Jordan.
All right.
Okay, ladies first. Just kidding. Would you? I'll do it first.
Okay. Hello. All right. Open up. Pull out. Open. Wait. Oh, she had a card, right?
There's one card, and one card only. What is his card? The Three of Clubs. And in fact, it is your card, the Three of Clubs. Thank you very much, Jordan. And for my final trick, it's another card trick. Very easy to do. But this trick is my last trick that I will be showing you before I go downstairs and show the kids magic as well. Now, this is a still blue deck of cards. It's been up here the entire time. And this magic trick was inspired to me from God specifically. When I was in Dayton, Ohio, I was 19, and I was doing a mission trip. We were over there when we were working on building this new church as well as a barber shop for this church. Because down there in Dayton, it is one of the most heaviest drug-populated areas in the world. I still believe it is number one in the world. At least in our country, it is. And it's very, very sad to see what we have here and what they have there. And it's only a three-hour drive. But I was reading the book of John at 3 in the morning, and I couldn't sleep. I was like, God, give me a magic trick to show the sermon for tomorrow. And this is literally the trick that he gave me as soon as I prayed that prayer. Now I need one more volunteer. Not everybody at once. Would you come up here for me, sir? Oh, one of each. What is your name, sir?
Phil.
Phil, nice to meet you, Phil. How are you doing today?
Good.
If you would stand right next to me. So this is a blue deck of cards. Every card in this deck is different than the same blue deck we were just using. What I need you to do is tell me when to stop. Right here, take that card. Go ahead and look at it. And would you show everybody else your card? Now, by a raise of hands, how many can actually see his card? Oh, wow, you guys actually can. Just making sure. Place it anywhere you would like for me. Perfect. Now what we're going to do, instead of going through the deck of cards, we're going to use the Bible and find your card. Now, do you know what the number one most used Bible verse out of the Bible is?
John 3:16,
correct. And so we're going to take the very first section of John 3:16, for God so loved the world. Now, what are some synonyms for God?
Jesus,
King, Lord, Savior, Christ, Holy Spirit. But out of all of the synonyms, one can be a card. And that is a king. So was your card a king? Yes. So now we have to guess this. We have a 25% chance. Originally had a 1.8% chance with 52 cards, but now we narrowed it down to the king. Now, for God so loved the world. When I think of love, I think of a heart. And just from your smirking, I'm assuming that your card is the King of Hearts through Scripture alone. Perfect. Well, thank you very, very much for your time. Thank you. Thank you. See, now, magic is a great tactic to have, and it's a great talent to have, and I've very much enjoyed doing what I've been able to do. But at the same time, you know, a lot of people throw a lot of different things in front of their life and in front of God. And, I mean, I definitely have in my life. Nobody's perfect by any means. I mean, I had a very nice job. I thought I had the best girlfriend in the world. But I was putting both of those things before God. I was putting money before God. I was putting my job before God. I was putting my girlfriend before God. I was putting other unnecessary things before God. And on a Tuesday in May 14th, I'll never forget the day, I went into the office and I ended up losing my job. I had 3 days to go find a new job because they took my job and moved it overseas with 35 other jobs. Then Wednesday, my dog was diagnosed with blastomycosis, which is the only case here in Indiana that they've ever had. So she had a 0.3% chance to live, 0.3, not even 1% chance, and she beat the disease. She's the only dog in the world to ever beat the disease. And then Thursday, the next day, the 16th of May, my girlfriend ended up breaking up with me as soon as I bought an engagement ring a week prior. Now, with all of this happening, I was like, why on earth is this happening to me? And I looked at myself, and I looked at my faith, and I looked at myself in the mirror, and I was like, this isn't who I wanted to be. And most people put these things before God, which they're nice. You know, everything on this world is temporary. Everything. You can't take your money with you. You can't take your loved one with you. And we're only here for a certain amount of time. I mean, we hear of people dying at age 20 to age 100. Some people go too early, but some people stay as long as they possibly can. And, you know, every opportunity that I get to perform isn't about my talent, but it's about God, because God has given me this gift to go do a 5-minute, 10-minute, 20-minute show, 30-minute show, and then explain my testimony. Because, you know, putting all those things before God made my life absolutely miserable. And that was when the devil was deceiving me the most, was because he was showing me that I have everything I could ever want. But then God was like, no, you don't have everything. You're missing the most important thing, and that's me. And when he took it all away, it was all a blessing in disguise, because I'm now able to do 100% what I love. God has led me to somebody else that is incredibly supportive of what I do, and I'm just incredibly blessed for this opportunity as well. So I just wanted to say thank you very much for your time, and I really hope you enjoyed the magic show today. Thank you.
That was awesome. I got a couple questions for you, Tyler, before we send you down to the kids. Were you ever scared of of using your talent? Were you ever scared of your calling that God has placed on your heart?
Yes, I definitely was afraid. The hardest thing, I think, was trying to give everything to God, whether it was my trust or whatever it was. I mean, I was afraid because I didn't know what my next step in life was going to be. I didn't know what tomorrow was going to bring, and I didn't know what I was going to do with the rest of my life. I mean, people often would tell me, yo, I mean, you cannot do magic to survive. But, I mean, if this is what makes me happy and this is what I want to do, then I'm going to listen to God's calling and put all of my trust into him, because he will provide the money, the situations, and everything. He will provide everything for me with these opportunities. So, yes, I mean, it was very challenging at first, but I know with God's trust, with me putting my trust into God, I know every day is going to be a new day, and it's going to be a new opportunity.
Well, obviously, with that, you just said you had people doubting you along the way. I mean, what have you had any people close to you really, you know, negatively pushing on you and doubting you?
Yes. In high school, when I was in high school, a lot of kids at my school were very rude, very mean. I went to a very small school and was bullied every single day for the things that I loved, whether it was roller skating, where I met Jordan when I was 15, or when it was just doing magic even. And it was just awful to see, like, how many people were against me, because I felt like the whole world was. And even my own father. I love my dad to death, and I forgive him for what he's done to me. But even still to this day, he's not too keen on my magic career. I mean, I did go to school to get a degree to use as a fallback, but I've wanted to do this ever since I was 4. And with you being told over and over that, you know, you're not going to be successful, you're not going to make money, you're not going to, I mean, there's so many evil things that you could say to somebody, and it will break people down. But at the same time, words can hurt to a certain level until it takes you into a complete different realm. And I was in a very, very bad realm of my life where I had suicidal thoughts and depression, anxiety. I was just basically trying to figure out what I wanted in life. And that's when God really stepped into my life, because I didn't grow up in a church family. My family never went to church. I never understood why, but now they actually do, because I gave my dad the ultimatum, you know, when I was 19 and I was getting baptized. I said, you know, you guys need to start attending church or I'm going to leave, just move out of the house. Well, as soon as I made that threat, I mean, it really wasn't a threat, they ended up attending church, and it's changed my dad dramatically, which is amazing, just to see what God is doing in my family's life alone, along with other people around me as well.
So we know about America's Got Talent. I mean, what is next? What is the future look like for you?
That's very hard. My absolute dream would be to travel the country and do magic shows for youth groups, whether it's just a youth conference in each state or just traveling across. But I'm leaving all of that to God, because, I mean, America's Got Talent is the hardest stage in the world. It's the biggest stage in the world. And if I can go on and do very well, then I'm just leaving that, all the glory, giving that all to God, because I don't want the fame and I don't want the money. I mean, I want to do it for God. Because if I start putting those things before again, then I'm going to get back into that depression stage, and then he's going to take these opportunities away just like that again. So I'm going to just leave it to God.
All right. Well, we just want to pray over you, and thank you again for coming. So, dear Heavenly Father, God, just we ask that you extend your hand on Tyler as he prepares for this stage. God, we know that ultimately the stage that we are concerned with is your stage, God, and doing doing our best with what you've given us. God, we just ask that you lift Tyler up, help him prepare, help him to always be a mouthpiece and always remember where these gifts come from. God, we just ask that you bless his footsteps and bless the journey that he's on. It's in your name we pray. All right, we'll get some of this stuff out of the way. So give it one more time for Tyler. So Tyler isn't the only guest that we have today. We have Pipsqueak and Clarabelle. They're two clowns from the South Whitley area. They're downstairs hanging out with the children right now, giving them a little show before Tyler comes down there too. So with the Fall Fest, we just wanted to have this to be just a very eventful weekend and just entertaining throughout the whole thing. So My name is Jordan. For those of you who don't know me, I get the privilege of being the youth pastor here and just hanging out with some awesome students. This is the first time that I've ever been asked to speak solo. I've been up here with Rob before, but Jason texted me and asked me if I'd be willing to do this. I was standing next to Corey, and Corey's like, "So are you excited, or are you crapping your pants a little bit?" And there's a little bit of, I started to answer, and he's like, "Well, the answer is yes to both. You just say yes." So I am a little nervous to be up here, but not, I know that's all in God's hands. So today, you know, the last couple weeks we've been talking about fear and really diving into fear. Last week Jason dove into a message called Skeletons in the Closet and the fear of our past being our future. Jason referenced 2 Corinthians 12:10. In that verse, I tend to think of that as my life verse a little bit. I've gone through some different struggles, and that was kind of what lifted me up. That is why, for Christ's sakes, I delight in weaknesses and insults and hardships and persecutions and difficulties. For when I'm weak, then I'm strong. Let me tell you a story about me a little bit. Some of you have heard my story. When I grew up in Seattle, Washington, which is a very different culture altogether. It's very liberal, there's not a lot of churches there. It's just a different way of life. But we moved to Indiana when I was 12. I started playing hockey with a men's drop-in league on Tuesdays and Thursday nights, and there was a couple pastors in there, and they kind of spoke into me a little bit. But one of my best friends, he had grown up in the church and gone away from the church, and he wasn't really a believer. So him and I got into a lot of mischief, and then I would go play hockey with these guys, and they would kind of feed into me a little bit. I didn't know that that's what they were doing. So I'm going to tell you about the very first time I prayed. I don't think I've ever told it to anybody here, but I got this video game called Fear, and it was like about these, you were like pretty much like a soldier against ghosts and demons, and it was just a kind of a weird game, but it freaked me out a little bit, but it piqued my interest. You know, the things that you're not supposed to do pique your interest quite a bit. Well, I talked to my friend Brandon about this game, and so that got us on kind of like a ghost kick. Like we started looking at the internet, trying to find urban legends around us and go and see all these places. So one thing that I kind of learned was that the more you seek out that stuff, the more it comes into your life. When I started like having these really weird feelings, and I like started all of a sudden not like the dark, not like being alone, like it just felt like evil around me. So I'm playing hockey and I'm talking to these guys about this. And one of the guys kind of spoke that to me, that, hey, the more you seek that out, the more that you're going to feel it. And he started telling me, whenever you feel like that, just to pray. And I was like, well, I don't know how to pray. Like, I didn't know what that meant. So I was taking a shower, and all of a sudden, I felt like there's something in the room with me. And it just scared the death out of me. And I just fell to the ground, and I started praying. And immediately, I felt just got over me, just pouring over me, and I felt completely fine after that. So that night was the first night that I really prayed, and then after that, I started praying every night. And that's kind of what started my prayer life, and what really started me diving into talking to God, and I wasn't reading the Bible, I wasn't, you know, attending worship, I wasn't spending time in fellowship with others, but I was, like, just starting to talk to God a little bit. So that was, like, weird that, and it's totally God's hand that used that fear to bring me to him. So back to 2 Corinthians 12:10, where that started feeding into me was going through like little things like that, and I battled a lot of drug and alcohol addictions throughout high school, and every time I would hit that valley, I would realize like that's when you kind of pick yourself back up. So being in that place where I felt completely vulnerable to the evil around me and the fear of that around me is when I felt my weakest, and that's when I opened up fully to having God come and pour over me. The author of 2 Corinthians 12:10 was Paul. Does anybody know Paul's background? Most people know Paul's background. Paul was actually Saul before, and he was a huge persecutor of Christians. Traditionally, there's 13 books of the Bible attributed to Paul's authorship, and he was mentioned way more than this, though. The very first time that Paul was mentioned was Acts 7:58. So that'll be up on the screen. So the very first time we see Saul's name, Acts 7:58, dragged him out of the city and began to stone him. Meanwhile, the witnesses laid their clothes at the feet of a young man named Saul. Now, a little backstory of this, what was going on at the time was Stephen was being martyred for being a Christian. This is the very beginning of Acts. This is really when people started going out and trying to do the work of Jesus. And Stephen was the first martyr. He was the first person to really lay his faith out there, and they killed him for it. And basically, jump into Acts 8:1-3, Saul kind of oversaw this putting to death of Stephen, and oversaw this persecution of Christians. So chapter 8:1, on that day a great persecution broke out against the church at Jerusalem, and all except the apostles were scattered throughout Judea and Samaria. Godly men buried Stephen and mourned deeply for him. But Saul began to destroy the church, going from house to house. He dragged off men and women and put them in prison. So, like I said, Paul was Saul before his transformation, and he was responsible for the majority of the persecution in the early church. Acts 8:3 points out literally that he went from house to house dragging people out and throwing them in jail. Does this sound like one of the world's best church planners and evangelizers? Does this sound like somebody that would maybe become one of the most influential people in Christianity? Not really. But it kind of proves that God will take you wherever you are, and it doesn't matter the fears or the skeletons in your closet, your past, anything, and he has the ultimate plan for your life. So like I said, I moved here from Seattle. My parents divorced when I was one. I grew up kind of unique. I went right with my dad. I never lived with my mom. So my dad and I moved here when I was 12, and I would go back and visit my mom in Seattle. Now, Tyler talked about Dayton, Ohio. Seattle has a really bad drug problem, too, because a lot of heroin and stuff comes to Canada through Victoria, British Columbia, and comes down to Seattle. About 4 years ago, my brother's girlfriend was pregnant, and they needed a place to go. So they got this bright idea with my mom that, hey, we're going to just get this big house. And my mom had been going through some issues previous to this. They got this big house, and my brother and his girlfriend renovated part of it so that they would have an area, and then my mom and my other siblings would be in the other part. Well, this worked out great for a couple months, and then my brother comes home, and there's a note on the door, a notice that they needed to leave because none of the bills had been paid, not since the day that they moved in. So this put a big spotlight on the fact that my mom had a problem. So after that, my brother and his girlfriend and newborn had to go find somewhere to go. My little brother and little sister went to my stepdad's because my mom had left my stepdad, and my mom ended up on the streets. She kind of bounced around house to house with friends and kind of burned bridges and did all that. And my stepdad, he's a really gracious guy. A lot of my life, I've had a better relationship with him than my own dad. My stepdad would let my mom in and let her shower and clean up and eat and that kind of stuff. Well, my little brother and little sister found needles and foil and a spoon that was burnt. And so that started this huge thing. My stepdad kicked my mom out, told her that she couldn't come back. And the last time that I saw, I haven't talked to my mom in 3 years until a couple weeks ago. I saw an article in the paper this summer that a house had been raided and it had like 35 people living in it. It was like a squatter's house. They made a fake lease, and the people had moved away to a different state and they were trying to sell it. Well, they got rid of all the signs and stuff, and they kind of moved in. And I saw a picture of my mom in that house, and she's just maybe 90 pounds soaking wet. I mean, my mom's a little shorter than I am, and just thin and gauntly. And I hadn't talked to my mom in years. And about a month ago, she called me. She was in a treatment center that she, by choice, went to. And she had gone there, and Seattle and Washington State has a lot of state-funded treatment centers, but they're not very good. She had gone to a Christian facility, and tried to get in, and they didn't have room. And so she left, she went back on the streets. And then she just so happened to go to my stepdad's house, and that was the only address that she had given them. And a lady showed up at the house and was like, "You're coming with me." And she was like, "No, I'm not. No, I'm not." And the lady was like, "No, no, Diana, you wanted this. You're coming with me." So she like got my mom, got all her stuff, and went to this treatment center. So she had to do a week of detox and then 4 weeks of rehab. And then now she just Friday night went to like kind of like a halfway house for drug addicts. And she's like, she has a curfew. She has all this stuff. But when she first called me at the treatment center, she asked me to send her a Bible. That was the one thing that she wanted, was a Bible. Because she knew that there was that hole in her heart that God really needed to come into. That 2 Corinthians 12:10, when she's at her weakest, she needed him to be strong. So God used this drug addiction, and I know it's just the beginning, and I know she's just coming out of this treatment center, and there's a world of possibilities, but I'm betting on the one. Because I know God, and I know God's strength. And he's coming into her life, feeding into her. So he's taking my mom out of this place and putting her on a plate, on a path. And I know that, and this one thing that I told her is she's always struggled with like self-doubt and with kind of, you know, the devil will beat you in and be in your head and be in your mind. And I've told her that the biggest thing she's going to struggle with is that self-talk and is feeling whole, because she's going to be inviting other things in, and she needs to just lean on God to feel whole and not on that path. And she's doing good. I mean, it's a beautiful testimony of what God's doing in her. He did similar to Saul, where he took him out of that place of he was a religious Pharisee just persecuting Christians, and he broke him down on, you know, the road to Damascus. He blinded him, beat him down completely, and that's how it works. You have to hit your bottom to open your eyes and see what God has for you. I have a tattoo of a bow and arrow, and I got that because my mom sobered up before, and my brother and I got that together, because with a bow and arrow, you have to pull it back before it can go forward. You have to be your weakest before you can be your strongest. And when you hit that point, you don't feel like you can do it. You don't feel like you can really live what God has for you. And even if you're not at that point, you know, one thing that I've been battling lately is I want to go to school full time. And just knowing like that's where God's pulling me to, but feeling like kind of that doubt, that not sure if that's what we, like if I can do it, if we can make it financially, like how we can make it work. God has that plan over our lives. Tyler and I, when we were in high school, we did all kinds of drugs together. We got drunk during the summer. We got drunk every night together. Every night. And you see what God's doing with him. You see me stumbling up here on stage. I mean, it's just a testament to what God really will do in your life. And he'll take your calling. And even if we don't listen even right away, even if we turn away and we don't answer that call, he'll just keep feeding and feeding and speaking into us. Tyler and I, I've told this before, the very first time that I really felt like I was called to something bigger was my senior year, and I was plastered out of my mind. Gotten pulled over that night. Don't know how I didn't end up in jail. And I was crying, and we were at a friend's house, and it was a house party going on, and I'm crying in the middle of everybody, telling everybody I'm drunk, telling everybody this isn't what we're supposed to do. We're called to higher than this. We're supposed to do more than this. And I took a group of them to church the next morning. But it wasn't done after that. I didn't immediately say, okay, this is what we need to do. I turned my back, and I turned away from that calling for more. But the thing that we always have to remember is that we're worthy, that we're his perfect creation, and that plan that he has for us is ultimately what's going to happen. And no matter what way it happens, it's going to. No matter how much we turn away, no matter how unworthy we feel, God just will come into us like he came into Tyler and speak into you. And I know a lot of Tyler's story, and just the place that he's at now is amazing. And for him to come and be able to share this, you know, 5 years ago would not have been possible. Tyler's one of my best friends, and I saw, I mean, to this day, he gets bullied and berated for what he does and what he loves to do. And just to have that strength of God coming into him and lifting him up to be able to come to a place like this and give his testimony, and to have God give him the confidence to go to the America's Got Talent next month, it's just amazing. So Tyler's going to be hanging out in between, and I know Pipsqueak and Clarabelle are going to be taking pictures and making balloon animals, doing all that kind of stuff, but just remember, like, you're worthy. We're going to have the band come up. I'm going to say a prayer and give you guys a little bit of what's going on right now in the church, kind of what the next steps are. So just pray with me. Dear Heavenly Father, God, we thank you. We know that you have a plan for our life and that you ultimately speak over it all. God, that whatever your will be done. God, we just pray that we are open-hearted to that. Pray for those that need to take that step and go to school, that hate their job, God, and need to find something that they will feel fulfilled in and be able to fulfill your calling and your ministry. God, the people that struggle with self-doubt, God, the people that feel inadequate, God, speak over them. The people that are down in the dumps, God, lift them up. God, most of all, I pray for the people that are not here, because those are the people that need you the most. When I first came to Level 13, God, you put that sign, "No perfect people allowed," and I felt welcomed. God, I just thank you for the blessings you give each and every day. It's in your name we pray. Amen.